You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. Let's thank our sponsors, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland. If you love beautiful Swiss cheeses, look for Emmy's premier Kalt Bock label and cheeses such as Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux. Aged in the 22-million-year-old, yes, that's 22-million-year-old Kalt Bock cave for superior flavor, unlike anywhere else in the world. If you're daydreaming about culinary school, maybe it's time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplôme, by visiting cordonbleu.edu. Cherry Bomb HQ is buzzing right now as we're working on our Jubilee conference, which is less than 3 weeks away. It's a little frightening when I say that out loud. If you haven't bought your tickets yet, don't delay. We just announced the entire speaker lineup, so be sure to check it out at cherrybomb.com. We've got the icons Ruth Reichel and Chef Ruth Rogers in conversation. Two Ruths under one roof, as my friend Jay put it. Don't say that three times fast. Samin Nosrat of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, the hit cookbook, is interviewing the one and only Nigella Lawson. The founders of Jane's Beard are speaking, and in fact, they're opening the conference. And Chef Preeti Mistry of Navi Kitchen in Oakland will be there too. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, folks. We still haven't even announced the food and beverage lineup. That will be posted in a few days, and it's equally amazing. Visit cherrybomb.com for more information and tickets. So a little later on Radio Cherry Bomb, we'll hear from Libby Willis, chef and co-owner of the hot, hot, hot new restaurant in New York, Mimi's Diner. Our first guest, though, has been helping us with our Jubilee planning, so I'm thrilled she could swing by the studio today and say hi to everybody. Her name is Lauren Goldstein, and she's a recent graduate of Northwestern University. While in college, she launched the Sugar and Spice Summit, the only conference dedicated to connecting college women and young female professionals with influential women working in the food industry. This year's summit will take place April 28th in Chicago, and I'll be there as one of the speakers, lucky me. Lauren cares deeply about female empowerment, and she's what the future of food is all about. She's bomb squad all the way. Everyone, let's welcome my future boss, Lauren Goldstein, to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for that intro. Wow, that is maybe the nicest thing that anybody has ever said about me.
Oh, well, I'm happy to say the nicest things about you. You deserve it. Thank you. Let's jump right into it. Why did you start the Sugar and Spice Summit?
So I have this whole spiel down pretty much. So basically, I had been writing for a Northwestern food publication my freshman and sophomore year. By the end of my sophomore year, I had pretty much narrowed down that the thing that I really loved writing about was women in the food industry, specifically female entrepreneurs in the food industry. And I was sent to interview Katrina Markoff of Vosges Chocolate and Wild Ophelia. And
she's such a, we love her.
She's amazing. And she is Willy Wonka. She has this chocolate temple in Wicker Park, which is this really cool neighborhood in Chicago. It's this massive purple building. You totally don't even know it's there. And I walked in and I was in awe. And I was interviewing her and following her around her office. And she was tasting chocolate and giving me chocolate to taste. And I walked out with this sort of sense of inspiration, and she had so much energy. And I remembered that she had told me that she didn't know that entrepreneurship was a career. She didn't know that really that she could start her own business. Food was always a passion of hers, but she didn't think it was a career option. And I had this idea in the back of my mind that there are probably so many other women like Katrina. fast forward a couple months to November 2016, I was studying abroad in Copenhagen, and I had stayed up the entire night to watch the 2016 election. And I,
Remind me what happened during that election.
I'm kidding. Don't remind me. It's like you can't turn on the TV.
It must have been hard being out of the country for it.
Exactly. So I was in Copenhagen. I'd stayed up the entire night watching the election on my laptop in my tiny apartment in Copenhagen, the time difference. So I really just felt like I wiped out. The next morning, I was in a foreign country. Nobody was talking about it. I didn't really know what to do or how to feel. And really the only thing that I felt like I could do was do something to empower my generation of women. And that's when that idea that's really when I remembered how I felt walking out of Katrina's chocolate temple. And so I tapped into that network of women working in the food industry in Chicago and in New York, because I go to school in Chicago and I live in New York. Well, I'm from New York. But I really tapped into that network. I sent a bunch of crazy cold emails. I had no date, no time, no place. And I basically said, if I did something along these lines, would you show up? And the response was an overwhelming yes. And when Mindy Siegel of Mindy's Hot Chocolate in Chicago said yes, I realized that I had a good idea on my hands. And it evolved into a full-fledged conference. There were 15 speakers, 21 female-owned or female-fueled brands participating, and 175 people showed up. And when it was over, all I could think was, okay, this was the best day of my life. How do I do it again next year, bigger and better? So this year we are celebrating Sugar and Spice's first birthday on April 28th. We're doing it in downtown Chicago this year. And I'm super excited that Carrie is going to be the keynote speaker at this year's event.
It's funny. It's only the second one, because in my brain, it's such a thing already that I can't believe you have only done one of them.
It's so tied to my personality these days. It's like all I talk about. It's how people find me. So, which is a great thing.
What were some of your takeaways from the first one?
There were two main things. One was the importance of visibility. People don't know what their career options are until they hear that there's someone who's doing it already. And I think for a lot of college students, my friends, myself included, the idea of graduating and not going to work for a big company with an established training program is really intimidating, because if you want to work in media, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you're looking to work in an industry that hires for immediate hire. So you're waiting to apply for jobs until 2-3 weeks before you want to be starting. And when you have friends who are working in finance or bigger corporate industries, and they have their jobs the September before they're actually going to be starting, that's a really scary thing. So for me, it was really important to show my peers that there were these women who had these careers and were super fulfilled and super happy and super successful, and they weren't taking a really, really corporate sort of climbing a very set ladder path. And then the other thing that I realized was so important was, and it wasn't something that I necessarily thought about when I was putting together the conference initially, was how important it is for the next generation, my generation of women.
So tell
women
everybody
in food.
Which generation is yours?
So I'm 21. I was born in 1996, which scares a lot of people when I say I was born in 1996. So, you know, I'm a college senior, and for my generation, you know, people who are 18 to 24 right now, that's really what the demographic is for Sugar and Spice. It's so important for these women to meet each other, because they're going to be each other's coworkers one day. And as cool as it is to have these role models to look up to, you know, they're not our contemporaries. So it was twofold, and that was incredible.
So where were you raised?
I was raised on Long Island, in a town called Jericho, New York. It's about an hour outside of the city. So I grew up interning in Manhattan every summer, starting the summer after my junior year of high school. So at this point, I have had 5 internships. So I joke that I'm the eternal intern. And right now, working on Jubilee, it's like do I have to find a real job? Can I just be an intern forever?
I did the same at your age, and I feel like I've sort of never stopped interning. Even at Cherry Bomb, I feel like the intern sometimes. Do you have siblings?
I have a younger brother. He is 17. He is a senior in high school. He just decided that he's going to the Ohio State University, which is incredibly exciting to me because it is home of Jenny Britton Bauer. I am obsessed with Jenny. Jenny, if you're listening, I love you. You know I love you. I Instagram DM you. my parents and my brother actually went to go visit Ohio State last weekend, and I couldn't go, and they were sending me a million pictures from the original Jenny's. They went to the market where Jenny's was when it was Scream, and I'm so excited to be able to visit my brother because of all the ice cream and Jenny's history that's out there.
I love that. So were you into food as a kid?
Yeah. So my family is super, super interested in entertaining and hosting and having big family dinners. And yeah, I grew up baking with my mom all the time. My family is a baking family by far. I don't know how to cook anything. That's not true. I know how to cook a lot of things, but I know how to bake way, way, way better as I'm sitting here with this.
I have to thank you. Tell everybody what you brought me.
So I brought Carrie a lovely box of my double chocolate chip espresso cookies that I lovingly call my first day of internship cookies because I have made them at every internship that I've ever had. Because when I started interning, I was 16 years old and I was scared that no one would want to talk to me. So I figured if I had cookies, people would have to come over and talk to me. So that's been my strategy. I guess I'm spilling the beans here. A lot of people ask me, you know, how have you, you know, maintained these internships, maintained these relationships with people from your past internships? And I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's the cookies.
But so your secret to success is a cookie,
is
basically.
Cookies. Yeah.
So I want to jump ahead and talk a little bit more about your generation, because we've been thinking a lot about the future of food, and one of the panels at Jubilee is about the future of food, and I love that T-shirt and sweatshirt that says the future is female.
I have it.
But I also think, you know, the now is female. I mean, it's incredible what's going on. And I'm just curious, from someone your age, what is it that you love about the food world, and what would you like to see from the food world? How would you like to see things change, develop?
One thing that I'm really interested in right now is how there are so many, and all of the people running these programs are women, of course, but there are so many awesome people, women, who are using food as a mechanism for community building and for social justice. And I think that is so, so, so important. I was listening yesterday to the Radio Cherry Bomb episode with Natasha Pickowitz, and, you know, someone like Natasha, who's using her platform as an acclaimed pastry chef to bring together all of her colleagues that work in pastry to have a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood. That's the kind of thing that I think is so, so, so incredible, and what's really interesting that's happening right now. I know you like to ask the question of what makes a modern chef, and I think that sort of willingness to step out of the kitchen and have your personality be maybe even more, your personality and your passions and your activism maybe be even more important than whatever it is that you're serving up to guests in your restaurant. And I think that's something that we haven't seen before. And I think we're seeing that with restaurants. We're seeing it with like packaged food brands. So like what Katrina does with Vosges and Wild Ophelia, she has a Wild Ophelia accelerator program that college and high school women can apply into, and they can receive funding to start a startup. And I actually know the first Ophelia who participated in this program, and I think, you know, just opportunities like that are unprecedented.
I think I promised them that we would write a story about the first person in the program, so you might have to interview her for us.
I totally could do that. She's great.
So fast forward from that.
Yeah.
The March for Our Lives. Did you march?
I unfortunately did not march because coming in from Long Island, the Long Island Railroad is really the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it was last Saturday. So I was coming in to bake cinnamon buns with a good friend of mine, Gabby Scalzo, who you may know from The Wing, but I met her through Instagram pretty much. I'm very big on my internet food friends these days. So I was coming in to meet Gabby to bake cinnamon buns at her apartment, and the Long Island Railroad decided it was just gonna run like every other hour. So I did not make it in for March for Our Lives, unfortunately, but...
What's your whole take on what's happening with that? And it's amazing how active high school students have become now, because I never protested in high school, didn't even think about it.
Me either. And my first protest even was the Women's March in Chicago last winter. And that was the first time I'd ever been part of any political demonstration. And I've always considered myself very much a feminist. I was a gender studies major at Northwestern. I fully operated within those circles, but I never, I just feel like there was always this association with protesting and demonstrating as being like really radical and sort of violent. And I don't know necessarily where that idea came from for me, but I think a lot of people my age had that idea. But then with the Women's March, I think it became a really mainstream, popular thing for people to be doing. And if your grandma was going out to the Women's March, then it was acceptable for you to go out to the Women's March. So I think that sort of mentality definitely fueled March for Our Lives. And I think also the power of social media, that high school students, they have access to Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and they can start a movement from the confines of their school or from their homes, and they don't necessarily need a television platform or to be invited on radio shows to be able to make a true difference. And I think that low barrier to entry is something that is making my generation so much more active and productive and interesting.
Well, I think it's incredibly exciting, and I know how involved your generation is. I'm really heartened to see the generation even younger than yours. And when you talk about food and activism coming together more and more, that really is, again, not just the future, but the now. I think the challenge for people who are maybe my age, around my age, a little older, is how do you combine that and not turn off your guests and your customers who just want to come get a sandwich or just want to come get a beer? You know, does it always have to be served up with a side of politics?
Of course. And I think that's where organizations like Hot Bread Kitchen are so interesting, because that is a community building effort at its core, but it's not political. There's nothing offensive about it. If you're offended by Hot Bread Kitchen, like how can you be offended by preserving ethnic bread recipes? So I think things...
And jobs placement.
Exactly.
For immigrants.
Exactly. And I think even organizations like Emma's Torch, like those kinds of organizations are activist, but they're not polarizing. And I think that's where that sort of sweet spot is.
No, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I just see it happening more and more. And all of these incredible women who we celebrate at Cherry Bomb, you know, they really don't get into it just to bake a cookie or just to open a restaurant. I feel like there's so much more behind what these women in the Bomb Squad do and want to achieve. And I see it. So I whacked the microphone. I told Lauren not to talk with her hands, and here I am.
Sitting on my hands.
And here I am flinging my hands around. You know, I just see it happening more and more, and it's incredible. I think it's, you know, last year was tough in so many ways, but I think there is a lot to be optimistic about right now. And you are one of those things that
thank
makes
you.
And one of those people that makes me optimistic.
Well, thank you. I am so honored, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us again about the Sugar and Spice Summit.
So the Sugar and Spice Summit 2018, the second annual, is happening on April 28th in Chicago. It is at an awesome venue called Savage Smith. It's from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Carrie's the keynote. I will be announcing the full speaker and vendor lineup TBD end of this week, maybe early next week, but you can find more information about it at sugarandspicesummit.splashthat.com.
Who can buy tickets?
Anyone.
Okay.
It's open to everyone. The tickets for students are discounted. So if you show up with a student ID, you get discounted tickets. I would recommend buying tickets in advance online. Early bird student tickets have already sold out. And yeah, it's open to all ages, all genders, and I would love to see you there.
Fantastic. Well, Lauren, thank you for being on our show and for everything you do to support young women. We will be right back with Libby Willis from Mimi's Diner. It's time for a quick cheese lesson from our friends at Emmy, the makers of traditional, authentic, delicious cheeses from Switzerland. Le Cremeux is a new, luxurious cheese from the Kalt Bock Cave. Sweet and unassuming at first, this semi-firm cheese keeps you coming back as its flavors and texture develop. Emmy's Kalt Bock Le Cremeux is aged in their 22-million-year-old natural sandstone cave. Whether you are snacking or party planning, serve your Kalt Bock Le Cremeux with blackberries, pineapple, or honey, and pair it with iced green tea or a bright Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc, or Riesling. Look for the red and blue Emmy logo at your favorite local grocer.
Hey, thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. This is Katie, HRN Executive Director, and I'm so excited to share with you our coverage from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival.
We are here live today at Charleston Wine and Food.
Join us as we talk all things food.
Come to Charleston, eat some seafood. Eat all of the seafood.
Chicken fried chicken with chorizo steak and salsa verde mashed potatoes.
So quintessentially like Southern fare at its finest.
And have important conversations.
We're also talking about professional women in restaurants and how underrepresented they are, people of color in restaurants, and how they're not talked about.
We get real with Food Network's Manit Chauhan.
Balance is BS. I was told that I wasn't going to be bleeped out.
And find out about raising sugarcane with Chef Sean Brock.
It's like being Indiana Jones or something. You never know what you're going to find.
You'll come away inspired by the power of food and the food scene in Charleston. Here's Dr. Jessica B. Harris.
Food is constantly in flux. Food is always moving. Food is the only real lingua franca that we have that allows us to connect with other folks.
So tune in to Heritage Radio Network on tour at heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't go wrong.
Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques and cuisine and pâtisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there. London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. Our next guest is the chef at the hottest new restaurant in New York City. Her name is Libby Willis, and she and her partner, Bill Clark, opened Mimi's Diner in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn. In an interview with Jari Magazine, they described Mimi's as a very, very gay restaurant. And with that one quote, Mimi's Diner became not just a hotspot, but the epicenter of the queer culinary movement, one that's being shaped by the likes of Jane's Beard, Queer Soup Night, Chefs Aura Wise, Preeti Mistry, Angela Dimayuga, and others. We are thrilled to welcome Libby to Radio Cherry Bomb for the first time.
Hello.
Libby.
Thank you so much. I can't imagine that I'm at the epicenter of the queer food movement, but I'm so glad that I am.
You kind of are. You kind of are.
I'm so lucky and thankful to be welcomed into the queer community and to be here for the queer community. I identify as a queer woman, and so sometimes I look at Mimi's Diner and I'm like, oh my God, I opened the planet from the L word. I cannot believe I did it. But it's not as lady centric as the planet, but it's definitely more queer and more welcoming and open to everyone. So to be here and to be at Cherry Bomb and to like talk about what I love and like discover more about what I love is really, I'm so thankful.
Oh, well, I'm blown away because it's really hard to open a restaurant in New York City and make a splash.
Yeah.
I mean, you usually need lots of investors behind you, investor money. You need a PR person, yes, a PR team, all these things. And sometimes even when you have that, magic doesn't happen.
Right.
But you have none of that.
Zero. We have zero, but a drive and a passion to entertain. I mean, that's really where Bill and I got the idea to open Mimi's. Was we had been, we met working at a bakery in Greenpoint.
You can say it because we love it.
Yes, everyone knows if you're a Cherry Bomb fan. Ovenly, Aaron and Agatha are great. They're definitely mentors to us. we met working really long days together, really long nights, and still tolerating each other. So we started throwing parties together. We love to entertain. We entertain in the same way. I trusted his vision. He trusted mine. And so we decided to open a restaurant together, which was crazy.
So this was the first time you owned a place.
Yeah. So... I'm a fourth generation restaurant owner. I just realized I was a fourth generation restaurant owner.
Sitting here right now?
Almost. just a few weeks ago, because my dad was reading an article that Bon Appetit wrote about us, and he goes, oh, you know, you're not a third generation restaurant owner, you're a fourth generation restaurant owner. My grandmother also owned a restaurant. So for my family, you know how some families have sports and that's what they love and that's what they can all like sort of gather around. Ours, my family was restaurants, and it wasn't necessarily food. It was hospitality. It was service. It was style. It was all of that. So
where did your family have these restaurants you forgot about?
In Ohio. I'm from Cleveland. And my dad is from New Hampshire. So my dad's side of the family had restaurants in New Hampshire. So not the epicenter of the food world by any means, but classic hospitality driven, good food restaurants.
So where did you grow up?
I'm from Cleveland. I'm from the east side of Cleveland, a small town, a kind of a nothing place. But being near Cleveland was great because Cleveland has like an incredible food scene.
It does. You've got all this special food, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Let's see. So there's hot dogs with French fries, which are Polish boys, which are very well known. Pierogies are everywhere, but I feel like pierogies are a Cleveland food.
Well, that sounds like heaven.
Yeah. It's mostly potatoes. Let's be real. Okay. Cleveland is mostly potatoes.
It's not gourmet pierogies.
No. Maybe you're lucky if you get sauerkraut, but it's mostly potatoes and cheese, which is not bad. I mean, I probably only eat potatoes and cheese, so that's good.
And who was the cook in the family?
Everyone. So my parents met in culinary school.
Really do have a culinary background.
I do. My parents met at the CIA, and my uncle also went there. So when it came to cooking at home, my dad really was like the special occasion cook, and my mom was the baker. Maybe my dad made sticky buns every once in a while, but mostly my mom baked. And my dad made the like fancy, we're going to go all out. I'm going to roast bones for 3 days and make demi-glace and make the whole house smell and make your book bag smell. And like, nobody will understand you. But it was okay. Like I learned what flavor was from a very young age. I learned how to use knives from a very young age. My parents taught me how to decorate cakes, and we had a cupcake bakery when I was 16 that we ran together and sold cupcakes and
they
pies.
You were hipsters before anybody yes. even knew what that was.
My parents are very DIY. Very DIY. So, so DIY, in fact, that like Bill and I built the restaurant on our own. Like we put the ceiling on up. Like my brother built us all of the banquettes and the shelves. My brother is very DIY. He's an incredible craftsman.
I feel a TV show coming on or something. Like if anyone from one of those networks is listening,
get
I feel like
at me.
The Libby Willis family
Mimi's Diner.
Yes, needs some kind of TV show. Somebody needs to jump on this right now. I can't believe that the space you're in was a vacant spot for 2 decades.
Yeah, 20
years. What the heck's wrong with New York?
What is wrong? It's an incredible space. It's not like Washington Avenue is a nothing street. There's a lot on Washington Avenue.
That makes me crazy in New York when I even in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, and you know I have Smith Canteen, the coffee shop, you walk up Smith Street a little bit, there's so many vacant storefronts that have been vacant since I've lived in the neighborhood for like 11 years.
I can't figure it out. When I think about our space in particular, and it's been vacant for 20 years, but there are traces of someone trying to start a restaurant, probably very illegally, because when we walked in there, it was a almost completely empty space, except for the kitchen had some fake walls that and a hood that was like hung by chain, and it was like cattywampus. It was not right.
What is that? I don't even know that word.
Cattywampus. Oh, well, my Ohio is showing. It's kilter, off kilter.
Okay, got it.
But
we didn't say cattywampus growing up in Staten Island.
Yeah, you probably had something much more chic.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so the place was just raw, and it looked like somebody maybe tried to start a restaurant, but did not get very far.
Wow.
And I think about it sometimes. I'm like, so was it that the people who owned the building were old and they didn't know what they had? Because there's residential apartments above us, and they've always been filled, but the commercial space not filled, and I don't know why. So they put it on the market. Our broker contacted us, and we were looking at a few different spots. So the way that this all kind of happened was I started a catering company with a friend, and it was kind of right business, wrong partnership. And at that time, the day before my previous business partner and I were getting ready to sort of dissolve the company, Bill had called me and he said, I got a lead on a space. I know that you're really busy right now, but I need your direction and your help and your thoughts and opinions about this bar. He wanted to open a bar. And I was like, well, I'm suddenly very free. So I'll come and look at it with you. And it's what is now Hearts.
Interesting. So Hearts, for those of you who don't know it, is another new Brooklyn hotspot.
Cool Brooklyn hotspot.
But a challenging space.
Yes, very small.
They kind of like shoehorned that restaurant into that space.
It's very little. The kitchen is very small. And we had a different concept. It was going to be Mimi's, but it was going to be more fast casual sort of counter service. But they came in, they had more money than we did. us having none. Then we sort of fell in love with the concept, and we wanted to do the concept right. We took a long time to sort of develop the concept. We worked with an incredible woman who's named Tara Page. She has the Tara Page Group, which is like a hospitality and financial.
I don't know her.
You need to know her.
Okay.
I'm going to connect y'all. Okay. She's amazing. She's another queer woman who... she has two facets of her company. One is a advisory sort of from the ground up, helps you build your investor deck, helps you build your financials, make sure you know what you want, flush out your concept. And then another part of her business is she comes into an already established company and takes over like CFO roles.
Oh, Tara, I might need you if you're listening.
Amazing.
We just had a meeting yesterday. We just hired a brand new baker at Smith Canteen,
cool.
Gabby Vigoro, who you might know. And we had a meeting, me, Joey, and Gabby had a meeting with the bookkeeper yesterday.
Yeah, the worst.
No one knows how key a good bookkeeper is.
It's incredibly important. Yeah. You cannot do it on your own.
Right. An accountant. Like I always thought like, oh, you need the good PR, you need this and that. No. You need a good lawyer, a good accountant, and a good bookkeeper before you open any kind of food business. So we had a cost of goods meeting because I never really, like, I just
the
didn't
most
know any of that stuff.
Part.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. It's all the unglamorous stuff.
It's the worst.
But Tara, you and me, babe, later.
She's incredible. I will connect you. She's really amazing.
But that's great that you had someone like that who had your back as you were starting.
100%. Bill and I knew right away that we knew the hospitality part. we trusted each other. We knew the hospitality part. We knew we could design the space. We knew that my dad could like help us do the plumbing and the electrical work, and my brother could build the things for us. But and we knew enough about pricing and costing out things and knowing about food cost. But like filing taxes.
Wait, what? Yeah, what's that?
Don't know about that. So, and also making us seem desirable. Like we had an idea. We said we want to make a neighborhood restaurant. We want to be the kind of place that people want to go multiple times a week. What does that look like? Do people do that? What is the market research? You know, so that's really what she helped us do, and gave us the confidence and told us like, oh no, y'all can do this. So here we are.
How did you decide on the menu? The menu is very unique.
Yeah, thank you. I see it as unique in the way that like it's familiar food, but it's not everywhere. So I wanted to have a menu that made you want to come back, that was craveable but familiar, that you could bring somebody who knows everything about food and everything about restaurants, but also like your friend who doesn't want to eat anything but a buffalo chicken salad.
Which you have.
Which
conveniently.
I do.
So the reason you're on the show today is because you're awesome.
Thank you.
And B, you have this incredible hotspot. But C, I came to the restaurant last night and begged you to be on the show and you felt sorry for me.
No,
so you said,
I absolutely
fine.
I'm pretty sure I said I'd be an idiot not to. Let me talk to my line cook. Because how could I not?
But that is how it went down. I begged Libby to be on the show today, and she graciously agreed to show up at 1 o'clock. I was there last night. I had such a good time. I knew a lot of people who were there.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Aura Wise, who I mentioned earlier, was having dinner there. And I pretty much ordered half the menu, I think.
Yeah.
We had the meatloaf, which was great.
Thank you.
I really wanted more. And it came with these really good greens. Was it kale?
It's what kale. Kale. I go through like 9 cases of kale a week.
I can imagine. It was so tasty.
Thank you.
We had that. We had the chicken parmesan.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Thank you.
So classic. We had the fried.
Giardiniera.
Like yes.
Yes. That's my favorite.
That was great. So it's pickled and fried.
Yes. Pickled and fried.
Gosh. Then we had another cauliflower situation, a roasted.
It's another fried cauliflower because I can't get enough of fried cauliflower.
I was like, wait, didn't we just order fried cauliflower? Didn't
this
we just have
breaded,
fried cauliflower?
Though.
It's like, oh, here's another fried cauliflower.
It's not breaded, so it's different. It's cauliflower with pickled raisins and pickled balsamic pickled mustard seeds and a pomegranate, like a spicy pomegranate sauce.
So good. And then, because I have to order mac and cheese if it's on the menu, I had the stovetop mac and cheese, which comes with little potato chips.
Yes.
And you use shells. Gotta love a shell.
You gotta get the sauce.
Exactly. Oh, that's true. Yeah. More sauce.
Yeah.
And then we had this incredible dessert, and Bill, I learned, makes your baked goods.
Bill's the baker. I refuse to bake.
You refuse to bake? Why?
I mean, I bake if he needs me to, but I spent a lot of my career as a baker, and it's not my favorite thing.
Huh, okay.
It's not my favorite thing.
Got
I
it.
Really like the like speed of cooking. And baking is regimented, and you do the same thing every day, and you have to do it the same way over and over and over again. And I find that with cooking, while the secret to a great restaurant is consistency, 100%, and doing the same thing over and over again, I realize that. But like sometimes you can push the envelope with savory cooking or cooking in general. You can sort of like sneak or cheat or like try something different and make it better. And with baking, you can always try something different and make it better, but usually you're just making it different.
Right.
So,
Well, the baked good we had last night was the Vietnamese iced coffee cake.
Yeah. And so good.
I mean, everybody knows I love Vietnamese food, but it was such a fun play on the Vietnamese iced coffee.
Thank you.
But it also was a little play on a tiramisu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to see, you know, just how so many cultures use the same flavors,
absolutely,
the same ingredients, and just do them in a very different way. But this was a really fun interpretation of that. And it was a really great American buttercream and coffee flavored cake layers and this really pretty sort of like swirl
chocolate
around
swirl.
The outside.
It's a chocolate cardamom swirl.
Oh, Yeah. So good. I couldn't believe how good that cake was. I love you. Buttercream so much. So I grabbed Bill and I was like, I'm so happy that that was buttercream yeah. and not whipped cream.
Yeah.
I think I told you that yeah. too. I hate when you go to a party and there's a beautiful cake
yeah.
and you bite into that cake and it's whipped cream and not buttercream. That is...
Whipped cream has its place, but it's not on the outside of a cake.
No.
It's not.
Now, you and Bill, last night, you two were like two little happy hummingbirds just yeah. working the room.
Yeah.
And you were so chill for someone who was also yeah. cooking.
Yeah. I love working at this restaurant.
I do.
I am so lucky to work with friends. I have an incredible staff of people of all different kinds of people. We have a mostly queer staff, but not a totally queer staff. But I have two very good friends working the line with me. Well, one is leaving today. It's his last day.
Aww.
So if anybody's out there looking for a job as a line cook at a new cool restaurant, Mimi's Diner is hiring.
How do they get in touch with you?
You can email me at libby@mimisdiner.com. That's MEMES diner.com.
Now, are you feeling a little overwhelmed? Because the attention has been incredible. I mean,
yeah.
Bon Appetit, The
yeah.
New Yorker,
yeah.
Eater, everybody.
Everybody. I don't know how it happened. I'm not overwhelmed because I have this staff, this team of people who are there for me and with me. And every day we get up and we tackle it and we make changes and we buy more food and we find time in the day to make more greens and to make more pasta. And, I am overwhelmed by the amount that people like what we're doing. That's really the most like heartwarming, incredible thing that's happened is when we were in the New Yorker, which was mind blowing.
Wait, I think you should just say that sentence again for yourself.
When we were in the New Yorker, I don't know if you've heard of it. When I read that piece, and when you're in the New Yorker, they don't interview you. You know, we had been interviewed for Jari, we had been interviewed for Bon Appetit, so we could control the narrative a little bit. We could tell them what we wanted, what we thought Mimi's was. But the New Yorker, they don't interview you.
They just come in and do their secret review.
They eat. My mom was their server.
I read that.
Amazing. And she, Hannah, wrote this really incredible piece about us and described the food exactly how we wanted someone to see it. Describe the vibe exactly how we wanted to see it. And that was the most rewarding thing, that, you know, that somebody would come in and understand my point of view. And it's the best part of all of this and giving people jobs.
Now, I looked at your website last night and you don't go out of your way to identify the restaurant as LGBTQ
yeah, no.
plus friendly.
Queer, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Everyone else has done that. And
yes.
it really all stemmed from that one
Jari.
Quote in Jari. How do you feel about people just jumping on that one
yeah.
quote and running with it
yeah.
and identifying your restaurant this way?
Yeah. That's a really good question. Bill and I talk about this a lot. Like, do we steer the narrative away from being queer? Do we, you know, is this, what are we about? And I'm really proud of our queer identity. Because,
and tell people what that means, because I think there are still a lot of people out there who have no idea what queer means.
Yeah. So for Mimi's, what being queer means is, I think, having a certain level of understanding and compassion to the people that you're working for and the people that you're working with, the people that are coming into the restaurant. So understanding that whoever walks in the door, don't make any assumptions about who they are. Treat them as if as they're your family. And also, I wanted to have a queer space for people in the restaurant industry to work, because we all know that, like, as a woman or as a queer person, as a trans person, the high pressure of like fine dining and even casual dining can be really toxic.
We learned that last year. Definitely.
Yeah, we're learning it every day. And it's it's about having a certain level of compassion, walking in the door and understanding that everyone has different needs, but like everyone is a part of the team. So you have to start at a level playing field. And I like that Mimi's has queer vibes because the people who come in are awesome. They're so cool. I have met so many amazing people that are so happy to be there and support other queer people. And we get straight people too. We have a lot of straight people that come in. And I love that the straight people that come in are like, yeah, this is awesome. You know, it's not only a queer restaurant, but to have a space that feels safe and welcoming in right now when all you hear about is how toxic environments can be is really incredible because I want to just be lead by example, be the kind of place that's like, oh, they're successful. They are accepting their identity. They're accepting the identity of their employees. They're accepting the identity of their clients and nothing terrible is happening to them. Right? Like people want to come. So
I think your biggest problem is going to be, nobody wants to leave once they get to the restaurant.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's comfortable.
It's, you know, get there early if you want a seat or get there on the later side.
Yeah.
But I was just like, you just want to hang out the whole time. The bar stools are so comfortable. And as I was sitting there, I was like, her biggest problem is going to be that people don't want to leave this restaurant. You just need to make sure they keep ordering food
sitters. We do. And we serve cheese balls with chili oil.
I noticed, yes.
And that's like one of the things where people are like, oh, yeah, can I have a few more cheese balls? I'm like, yes, absolutely. How about a drink?
Our server was amazing because we just kept ordering and I apologized. And she said, oh, no, I prefer this very much to the table that you go over to. And you say, oh, you know, would you like anything else? Can I help you? And they're like, no, we're okay.
Clarissa is the best. She was your server last night and she's hilarious and like knows how to get you what you need.
She took great care of us. You know, I'm looking at the Bon Appetit headline right now. You know, Mimi's Diner is serving queer hospitality.
Yeah.
So not just has your restaurant been identified as this, but like I said earlier, you know, it's sort of become the epicenter of this queer culinary movement. And you in turn are one of the spokespeople for it, whether you asked for that or not.
Yeah, I had no idea that was coming.
Mm-hmm. How's that feeling, that role?
I feel like I need to like read some more queer theory and come up with a few more answers to what exactly it means to be a person in the queer food industry. I remember a year or two ago, Jari had a panel about queer food. And I think most of the panel was spent trying to answer what queer food is. And nobody could really come up with the answer because I think being queer has a ever-changing definition. And like being queer for me is different than being queer for somebody else. And so food, the way that you, like a queer person interacts with food is going to be different than the way another queer person interacts with food. But the thing that I keep coming back to when trying to talk about what queer hospitality is it's just inclusion. I mean, not making space for conversation, making space for compassion over and over again. Say, understanding that like everybody comes to the playing field with something different, a different experience, and learning how to work together.
I think it's an incredible moment in food right now because last year was so bleak with Me Too just realizing what was going on in these restaurants that a lot of us knew about but didn't do anything about or
tolerated
exactly. Yeah. And to see this now flourishing in 2018 is really incredible.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting to trace it and see how it happened. You know, I think Jari played a big role in this.
Yes.
Like I mentioned Preeti Mistry earlier, you know, she was one of the first chefs I feel like was really being vocal about being queer in interviews and not being afraid because I think so many chefs were afraid that people didn't want to, you know, it was equal to sex for them.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to know about your sex life.
For sure.
You know,
for sure.
And now it's become something completely different.
It's political and people are people are wearing their politics on their t-shirts, you know, they're, mm-hmm. And it's really refreshing to see, because people spend their lives in restaurants. You know, it's, the restaurant industry is so incredibly demanding that if you are living in secret or living in a toxic environment, like, how can you be your best self? Because so much is demanded from you. Constant hard work, standing on your feet. I mean, sometimes customers aren't great, you know?
No. They're not.
We're really lucky. People are so nice to us at Mimi Steiner. It's like, I used to be a wedding cake designer.
You've had so many lives.
I really have. Oh, I'm very young with very many lives. I sold wedding cakes in Cleveland for a while. wedding clients can be awful.
Well, they're called bridezillas for a reason.
Bridezillas can be awful. And, you know, when you interact with people every day that are demanding things from you that seem frivolous, it can be really, really, really hard. And so I wanted to create a restaurant that didn't feel frivolous, that felt like this is food to sustain you. This is food to warm you. This is an environment that feels romantic, comfortable, playful, fun. And that when you interacted with the, like, I come out to the, right, you said I was working the floor, right? I come out.
I think I called you a happy hummingbird.
A happy hummingbird, exactly. You know, I want to be seen. I want to see everybody. And not in the, like, show-offy chef way, but in this way where it's like, okay, the best part of cooking is watching someone's face, eating it. So I want to see what people are enjoying. We just ran a new vegan dish last night.
And how did I not order that?
Whoops. It's a sweet potato and mole dish.
Was that the sweet potato with coconut?
Yes. It's a savory, it's like a coconut bacon kind of thing.
I'll come back and have it.
Perfect. And I want to know what people thought. So I knew what tables ordered it. So I went over there and I was like, hey, how are you? What's up? and that's the best part. You know, it's like feeling familiar. Familiar mm-hmm. food. You don't have to speak a special language to read the menu. You can pick up the menu and say, oh, damn, meatloaf. Okay, I'm going to order meatloaf.
Well, ultimately, I think at the end of the day, everybody just wants their cheers.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%. They want that place they can walk into. And I think that's why it's so important not just to have a welcoming place for your employees like you're doing, but employees and your guests, which you're also doing.
Yeah.
you know, and I've talked to the team at Smith Canteen about this. But and they're incredible.
Yeah.
And we have so many regulars because it's a coffee shop. You know, people just come in every day to get their coffee. But, you know, there are so many little kids, and maybe you have a little boy who's got long hair,
mm-hmm.
you know, or you don't know how someone identifies mm-hmm. themselves, and mm-hmm. and really just trying to be mindful of those things
absolutely.
Today is so important. And I think
absolutely,
you know, I wouldn't say restaurants are struggling with it. I think the ones who are aware of that are having an easy time having that conversation mm-hmm. with their teams and their guests. And but I think there are still a lot of restaurants that you know have to catch up. And I think it's wonderful that they have you to look to.
Thank you.
As a place that's doing it well
and
just doing things so beautifully.
Thank you very
I barely
much.
Know you, but I couldn't be prouder of you.
Thank you so much. I deeply appreciate that. I just want to be good. That's really what we have tried to do, is make solid food in a solid environment and have people want to work for us. Because people ask me a lot, so was this your dream? Did you always want to open a restaurant? Is this what you set out to do? And I can't definitively say yes, because I was told from a very young age, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. But I started working in restaurants because I couldn't keep myself away from them. And I always was thinking about, like, wow, this is sometimes really terrible. What would make it better? How do I make this better? And that was always from the standpoint of an employee. And so when we opened this restaurant, Tara asked us, what are your main goals? And I said, I want to be the kind of place that people want to work. I want to be the place that never has a hard time hiring, because it's known that you have a good time there, that you make money, and that you're supported. And the opportunity to give people jobs, and give people jobs who like aren't necessarily always afforded jobs, and give them a job that like sometimes is the worst. Being a porter, being a dishwasher is the worst job. You're not appreciated. You're covered in dirty water all the time. But like, for somebody, for an owner to come up to you and be like, hey, what's up? How you doing? Like, what can I get for you? Do you need a Coca-Cola? Did you get a snack today? Like, listen to their problems and like pay them well. That's like, gives me the most joy, that like they can eat and they can like have an apartment and have a safe place to come to work.
Well, you are amazing.
Thank you.
The food world is very lucky to have you in it.
Thank you.
So
I really appreciate
it. I hope this
that.
Is just the first of many conversations we have over the
too.
Next year. Oh, we're going to get kicked out in a minute because this we've gone past our time.
Sorry. Please don't apologize.
Libby, thank you for being
thank
on the
you,
show.
Jerry.
And thank you to our sponsors for supporting today's episode. Emmy, the maker of delicious cheeses from Switzerland, and Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Thank you to our engineer, Dave Tadashore, and to the band Tra La La for our theme song. Don't forget, Jubilee tickets are on sale right now. I heard a rumor that Libby might be
at
Jubilee.
I might be there. Well, at least my food, if I can't find a line cook to cook for me.
We'll try to find a line cook to cook for you. We want you. We need you there. Visit cherrybomb.com for tickets and more details. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine. And did I even read that right? I'm like losing my mind at this point. I need one of those Lauren Goldstein cookies.
Yes.
Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. We'd love it if you could leave a review of Radio Cherry Bomb on your favorite podcast platform. Let us know who you'd like to hear on a future episode or topics you'd like us to cover. Thank you for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.